Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You say you're the man, but you don't have red hair and you're not dating the architect.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal dish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads get ready for the short meander to payback. We are here via our Ica Pro-powered DeLorean, taking a long, dark, scary walk into 1995, the new generation era of the World Wrestling Federation. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage, Titan Shrugged himself. He does not need a pencil as the head pen of Cultaholic. He needs a pen. He gets it right every time. He is Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
Good day, Tom. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I saw your Titan Shrugged tag team partner in a video this week.
I did as well.
Yeah, he's keeping nice and busy. Good lad.
Sure is. Him and many other prolific wrestling writers, part of the Inside the Ropes magazine, trying to bring back the wonders of print journalism, and I may have a small hand in that.
Ooh, I was going to make some sort of quippy joke saying I assume our invites are in the post, but hey, you're already there, so that's fine.
Yes, it's a hell of a team, as you've seen, with Keith Elliott Greenberg, Bill Apter, Brian Elliott, former boss of mine, and of course James Dixon, Finn Martin.
It is very much Mount Rushmore of wrestling writers.
It's Dr. Sidney M. Basil, who is the fake psychiatrist who did articles for Personal Illustrated back in the 80s.
Oh, and stately Wayne Manor from Power Slam. Let's get him in as well.
I'll see what I can do. I love stately Wayne.
When we record this, we are 24 hours removed from SummerSlam and the return of the boy with the shiniest teeth, Roman Reigns. Did you have a nice time watching SummerSlam?
I thought it was a pretty good show. Not great, not terrible, just an enjoyable show with a minimum of stupidity, although the main event, God, Braun looked like a friggin' idiot.
He did look a little bit stupid, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he's cutting foam into wedges and it falls victim to a pinfall.
That was pretty bad. It was so quick. It was just like, I'm going to cut this canvas up a bit. And then all of a sudden, oh, I've just, like normally, like with the canvas, the cutting the canvas spot, it's a rare trope in professional wrestling, but you at least allow like 10, 15 minutes before you return to it, not like instantly.
And the other thing is, if he's been remade into this horrifying monster where Bray's brought the worst out of him through his actions, and now he's a fool, I'm going to kill you mode, he grabs a box cutter. Now, what would New Jack do in this situation?
I mean, the box cutter wouldn't have gone on the canvas.
Exactly. It would have cut something a little bit more artistic, like that mask, first of all. And whether he cut something underneath that mask is up to interpretation.
New Jack would, he 100% would not have cut the canvas. He would have been wearing the Fiend's face by the third chorus of Natural Born Killers had finished.
He'd gone full Ed Gein.
Oh, Christ.
Boy, thank God this show we're about to review today doesn't have any rotundas versus dumb baby faces.
Oh, hey-o! History repeating. We are going to get to this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. It's a Christmas edition, which is great to do in the height of summer. Yeah. It's a Christmas Raw.
Well, given how humid it is today, I can go for some Yuletide weather.
Yeah, let's strap on our gear, our festive gear and festive cheer for this week's episode of Raw.
Pop on my snow parka.
Before we get to this week's episode of Raw, let's run down some of the things going on in the wrestling news this week, as per the pen of Dave Meltzer for the Wrestling Observer. So he's looking back on Survivor Series, did between a 1.2 and a 1.4 buy rate. Now, other sources pegged it much lower, so 1.4 is very good. It's a huge increase from the previous year. That basically means, Justin, what we know already, Bob Backlund equals ratings.
Well, that's true. He's a draw, but hang on. Let me verify with my usual buy rate source real fast. I've just pulled it up here. Actually, it was higher than the last two Survivor Series.
Oh, really?
92 did 250,000 buys. 93, a show that I purchased, only did 180,000, which I think was the lowest for any big four pay-per-view to that point. Actually, the 89 Rumble was smaller than that, but that was the second lowest. This one did 254, so just up from 92.
Okay. So either way, it could have been worse. It could have been a worse time at the box office for WWF.
Yeah. It ranked third for pay-per-views out of five for the company in terms of buys that year, ahead of the Rumble and King of the Ring.
Looking ahead to the future of WWF Raw in just a moment, interesting event occurred at the December 17th ECW Arena show. About 800 people were there, a bit less than normal. And after the show, the fans were all chanting ECW, ECW. According to Dave Meltzer, Paul Heyman then got on the house mic and started swearing, telling fans not to chant ECW because we didn't deserve it, because we didn't give you anything to chant for.
Really?
Yeah, this is like a little meltdown from Paul Heyman. I initially first read it as Paul Heyman was angry at the fans for there not being as many, but it turns out that Paul Heyman probably didn't like some of the booking that went on and just wore his heart on his sleeve that night.
Sounds like a very savvy move from a promoter to say, no, 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 like, this isn't our best. We'll show you our best one day. Save it for that. And, you know, everybody goes home thinking, like, wow, Paul gets it. You know, Paul's not just going to stand by some draconian show and say that was our best and just because it had the ECW branding on it. You know, it all seems like a preemptive move just to look good in the future. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah. The main event of that particular show had Paul and Public Enemy retaining the tag titles against Sabu and Tasmaniac. And the post-match scene saw a brawl between Sabu and the Tasmaniac, the Public Enemy, and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit. And then 911 turns up and just chokeslams everybody.
Just a couple of comings and goings from the WWF before we get into the show. Titan Sports is having a chat with a rather large tag team at this particular point in time. Who do you reckon that might be?
Rather large team. Are we talking height or weight?
Height.
Would they be two big, scary-looking mountain men who happen to be twins?
Maybe.
Are their eventual names going to sound like Jake and Elwood Blues from the Blues Brothers?
You've nailed it. That's right. Titan is said to be talking with Ron and Don Harris. Now, that ends up being incredibly true because we will see Ron and Don in the WWF by the time the Rumble rolls round.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they are right up Vince's street, aren't they, these lads?
Yeah, they're just two big, scary-looking mountain men. Basically, if... take two Eric Rowans and give him a full head of hair.
Yeah, very weird seeing them with hair, be warned. We mentioned this last week as well. The Raw taping featured some appearances by newcomers, the Minotaur, and, of course, the Blacksmith. No more news on them other than they made an appearance. And we say farewell to Luna Vachon, who has been fired. No word on why this happened. I don't suppose you would know anything on what occurred here.
I do not personally recall. Uh-huh. I just know this. I just know the time is consistent because I think this is. I mean, it is weird because I mean the Raw video game is coming out soon, and she's on the game as the first female. female playable wrestler, so that's very odd.
That's always infuriating when you have this situation where people get sacked just as video games are coming out. Like, if you look, and that's a problem even to this day. Like, you look at the 2K Battleground roster, and Gallows and Anderson are still on it.
Well, I mean, you can just recreate Talking Shop Mania.
Do you know what? It's going to be of a similar caliber.
Although I don't recall the part of the Boner Yard match where Gallus got eaten by an alligator.
We're adding it now. That's really all the news at the moment. It's one of those times where everybody's wrapping up for Christmas in our timeline. So everything's gone a little bit quiet. WCW guys are all taped up until the new year, as is WWF. So hopefully in the next week or so, as we get close to the Royal Rumble, we'll have some more fun news from Meltzer.
Yeah, Dave works during the holidays, but yeah, this is the time when everything, everybody's just packing it in and getting ready for some eggnog and some keeping toasty by the fire and all that stuff.
Oh, what a lovely image that you paint.
Yes, it's very Norman Rockwellish, is it not?
It is. John, can we have Dave Meltzer on the front cover of It's a Wonderful Life?
Chestnuts roasting, you know, on an open fire.
I've had a feel of my presence. A cassette player, it might not.
By the time I get the Three Kings Day, he's opened 5 gifts.
We love you, Dave.
Yes, we do. And what does the happy little elf think? -5 stars.
It's a wonderful life, but plans change.
it's a wonderful life.
Anyway, festive cheer. Pop your Christmas hats on. Let's watch a Christmassy episode of Monday Night Raw.
So we are going to Monday, December 19th, 1994. It was taped before last week's show. This was taped on November 28th, before last week's show was taped. So they're out of order. That's the fun of this.
Oh, right.
Oh, the wacky taping schedules of WWF in the mid-90s. This is Poughkeepsie, New York, the home of the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, which is a nice little venue. And yes, as just stated, this was taped 3 weeks before the show that we reviewed last week was taped, because that aired semi-live-ish.
So, well, yeah, it's a bit perpendicular, but that gives that roughly where we are. That's roughly where we are. There's nothing really on this taping that is timeline-wise consequential.
So I give Bruce a pass. He probably had to storyboard all this stuff, and he probably just went nuts as a result. You end up being like Charlie from It's Always Sunny doing the Pepe Sylvia bit.
It's pretty much where we're at.
Barney gave him a cigarette. He's freaking out. Anyway. So we start out fairly cold here. We have Luger making his entrance, which is cold as it gets.
Stone cold, mate. Luger's in it.
Well, no, Stone Cold's interesting.
Hey now.
I'd rather watch the Brian Bosworth movie Stone Cold than this match.
Within moments of this starting, I know last time I got on his case for stuff like this, but Shawn Michaels was my hero the moment this got started.
Do tell.
As Luger is walking down to the ring, he's got in front of him a kid with the flag of America. And Shawn Michaels just says, "Hey, that kid looks really happy to be here." And this kid had this face on him. Like, he wanted to be anywhere else other than walking Luger down to the ring.
He had the same expressionless look as half the people on the Thunderdome screens.
He really did. I put here, the flag bearer is a physical embodiment of Lex Luger's personality.
It's his id.
It is, isn't it? It's like his spirit that walks beside him. This kid is Lex Luger's Patronus.
Let's not overthink this. It's Lex Luger. And it's 94 WWF, so let's not overthink it now.
Fair point, well made. I still think it's his Patronus. A sad kid with the American flag.
Well, soon... Well, eventually Luger upgrades to an American male with a American flag, but we'll get to that in about 6 months.
It's where the kid evolves like a Pokemon. It's the same kid all the way through. It was a little kid about a week ago. It's just a fast evolving Pokemon.
Well, this whole bit is so interesting that we show a woman in the crowd with a sneaker keychain, which I forgot existed. It was worth going to that shot, believe me. We hit the intro after that very cold opening, so cold we had to throw three more logs on the fire. We go to Vince and Shawn, future WrestleMania opponents, both wearing Santa hats. So that's twice that Raw commentators were eventual WrestleMania opponents, Vince and Shawn and Cole and Lawler.
Oh, God. It must have happened more often than that, surely. The idea of... Huh? Oh, not WrestleMania opponents, maybe, but certainly opponents, like Jim Ross and the coach.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of WrestleMania 16 when we had Randy Savage and Rob Bartlett.
Oh, what a match that was. What a joint hallucination that was.
It's like two men enter, then they both leave, and neither comes back. So we start out this show with Lex Luger versus IRS. Because we all deserve a nice, peaceful Christmas slumber.
Oh, and it's what's funny is, and I get it, your roster is so weak that you've got to make everybody feel important. But it's the way that they bill IRS as this great threat to Luger constantly.
Well, I mean, once upon a time, Lex Luger versus Mike Rotunda in Jim Crockett Promotions would have been interesting. Kind of. So we show a fan with an "I cheat on my taxes" sign, and they recycle last week's story about the athletes and the whole sports memorabilia tax cheat controversy. They're now recycling news stories.
It's true. It's an old one, that is. I guess again, it's Christmas, isn't it? Everything's winding down. They've got some old notes, some previous commentary, and they're just going through those this week.
I call this the best of, but that's stretching it.
It's just, I think the most accurate part of Best of Raw, it is of Raw. Welcome to an of Raw. Here are the moments from Raw. Do you mean the best moments? No, just the moments.
Well, by default, sure.
it's in that same awkward bracket as when somebody says, "Have a night." Do you mean a good night? No, just have a night.
I'd rather have a rook.
Hey! Only here do you get chess gags with your wrestling. This is free.
For a reason.
Yeah.
So, Iris has with him DiBiase and a druid. And, of course, his face is obscured by his shroud, so we have no idea who it is. But they speculate during the course of the match who these druids may be. So during the match, Luger runs the ropes, the druid grabs his foot, because that's what druids do, they trip people. Vince at one point calls Luger the big mesomorph.
That's a hell of a line.
Why was that not a t-shirt? But then Shawn gives Luger a better nickname. He calls him the total package.
Ooh, I never spied that.
He did call him that.
Wow. That's many years in the making.
This is Shawn in full "you don't have the balls to fire me" mode.
He knows at this point he's probably the best they're going to have for a good long while. So he's going to kick back a bit.
Shawn's in full "you need me more than I need you" mode. So Vince thinks that some of these druids could be Million Dollar Corporation members and speculates that one of them could be Bundy. Well, sure as hell ain't the one at ringside.
We would know if it was Bundy. I'd love if one of them was Bundy, but like the clothes weren't big enough, so you just see his legs sticking out underneath like the black cloak. We wonder if one of these men is Bundy! Big fat tree trunk beige legs sticking out from under one of these men could be Bundy!
It's either Bundy or they're moving a wood lathe covertly. So we get this weird edit after a body slam where Luger's all of a sudden running the ropes. They trim the hell out of this thing.
It must have been terrible because they left a lot of Bushwhackers versus Well Done in later on. So this must have been bad.
Oh yeah, and Luger takes this amazing bump to the floor. He's sort of like near the ropes because he's eyeing the Druid. Iris gives him a running knee to the back, and Luger, you know, usually when you fall through the ropes, you sort of go downward, you brace your hand on the apron, and then you tumble out somewhat safely.
Yes.
Luger flies out like he was ejected from a car.
Everything he does is like he's learning for the first time.
I mean, does Mesomorph mean like some sort of like primordial like creature that's like learning human behavior? I mean, I know it actually means someone with enhanced musculature, but...
But surely there's an element of that as well. I am learning human behavior. Maybe that's why they had that kid walking out in front of him, so he could emulate human walking better.
I think Chris Statlinger does a better impression of a human being than Lex Luger does.
Well, I don't want to call her an alien. Come on, Jim, play along. No, she's not an alien. Yeah, we know, but come on, Jim. Yes, you can. You're commentating.
Hey, JR put over Brody Lee Big on Saturday.
He did. He was excellent in that. I thought that was excellent.
Brody Lee looks like the baddest MF-er in the business right now.
It just seemed to come a bit out of nowhere. Like, obviously, they've been ticking along with Brody Lee. And then all of a sudden, it was like, Brody versus Cody. Oh, Brody has just decimated Cody.
Well, they were selling the idea that Cody, by taking some main defenses, he's wearing himself down, and Brody just took advantage of him.
Yeah.
Just didn't overthink it, just went in there and killed him dead.
It was great.
It was better than this match. And this is more competitive, but that's beside the point. So the Druid puts the boots to the Luger. We see Vlad in the crowd. Hi, Vlad. Merry Christmas. So the Druid's wearing a ring that Vince says looks familiar. Now, given who the Druid ends up being, have you ever known the Druid, this man in particular, to be known for wearing a certain ring?
No, never. The rings that they wear on their hand have never, ever been mentioned or referenced or come to light in any way, shape, or form. So when they zoomed in on the hand with a ring and Vince is like, that ring looks familiar! I was like, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It's not Chris Novitzky's class ring. It's not Stephen McMahon Helms' engagement ring. It's not even, you know, Don Corleone's pinky ring. It's just a regular, like, big jeweled ring that has never come into play once.
Never mentioned, never referenced. But who does the ring? We find out who the ring belonged to, though, didn't we?
Yes, in reverse order. So finally, we bring up the idea that Luger's once feuded with Tatanka, which makes sense as to why he's fighting the corporation here. It takes about 6 minutes into this dreadful match. Then Sean makes a Dumb and Dumber reference. Sean says Luger should have taken the money. Vince says Luger has integrity. Yeah, that's why he did take the money eventually.
That is a good line they drop it. Oh, Lex Luger's got integrity. We'll see.
Hang on, let me hold my sides while I laugh here. So Vince points out that Luger's entered the Rumble. Starts making the comeback. There's a lot going on here that's like unconnected. Luger attacks a Druid, gets counted out. Once you know it, the Druid is Tatanka.
Well, of course, the rings! Of course! All those rings, the ones that Chief J Strongbow gave him. Those Native American official rings that J Strongbow, a real Native American, gave to Tatanka.
What is Strongbow, Frodo?
Hey, my precious.
One ring to chop them down. So then Dumbass Luger gets counted out while Brian went to Tatanka. And eventually just Tatanka, Iris, and DBS all just leave and they just cut off and just move on from that. Like, ah, the hell with Luger. Even they've had enough at this point.
Oh, it's so sad to see someone like to see the drop of Luger, the decline of Luger. Like we talked about on the Survivor Series watch along, just how they are so blatantly given up. But here's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in this company right now.
No.
You could probably do with, and I hate saying it because I don't think he deserves it, because he's such an arse. But like, you need something right now. You need a starter cap. You need some people at the top. And Lucas, in terms of like the, if you had somebody working with him and training him and coaching him a bit more, if that was a possibility, you could still have a star there.
Well, problem is he doesn't have. You know, many guys who know how to work his match and get the best out of him. I mean, Flair's not here. If Flair was here, you'd see the best Luger. If Steamboat were here, you'd see the best Luger. But all you have is like Shawn and Owen on the heel side that can do that.
And unfortunately, he can't be in there with anybody like some of those great workers of our time and just bring out a good match. He needs the right opponents to do that.
Yeah, Lex, he stays with the basics, and unless someone sells their ass off for him the way that someone like Shawn could, it's just not going to work. So we cut away from all that for the tag title tournament update. And Shawn takes pride in making this tournament possible because he vacated the belts.
Yeah, he was owning it. I thought that was quite funny.
I think Shawn's the only Triple Crown winner that's vacated all three belts at some point.
Ooh, let me think. IC, yes.
Uh-huh.
Tag, yeah, WWF. European.
Triple Crown, I said.
Oh, my apologies.
Although European, he did lose in the BS match to Hunter.
Yeah, so there was a kind of a vacation there.
Sort of.
I wonder how many other people have been Triple Crown vacators.
I think just Shawn. It's got to just be Shawn.
Diesel be
It could only be Shawn.
No.
No, he lost the world title fairly.
Right, yeah. Unless, if you're counting WCW titles as well. Didn't Kevin Nash give the belt to Flair?
He did, yes.
If you're counting WCW titles.
Must be a click thing.
I think it's just they like winning belts. They're just not massively keen on losing them.
Well, just, you know, by standard means, that is.
Mm-hmm.
So we get footage of Bam Bam and Tatanka defeating Men on a Mission. And I realized, hey, it's the same crowd that's there tonight. This was taped in Poughkeepsie also.
Oh, same people.
Wearing the same clothes.
Nice. So I thought they were different tapings running at different times, but apparently not. Apparently they just did a whole bulk of Poughkeepsie stuff before Christmas.
And why not? Poughkeepsie's a great place to spend the holidays, I guess.
Come to Poughkeepsie for the holidays.
You can film a Hallmark movie here.
There is really, there's that and other things in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Let's make ornaments out of fishing lures.
Oh. Is that something that really happens, or have you just made that up?
I just pulled that out of somewhere.
Pulled that out of your ass. Amazing.
So this
is the thing about this tournament, is that it's always funny when you realise this whole tournament is already done. Like, in the timeline, it's already done.
Most of it.
Yeah.
I believe...
Yeah, I thought it was all done.
It could be, but I'm not entirely sure. I haven't done that much research, to be honest with you, because who the hell cares?
It's only now. It's only nowadays, but obviously pre-Thunderdome, where you could probably get away with doing an entire tournament taped. Because the only way to ensure that no fans can talk about your product is by having no fans there.
That's true. Well, actually... I think he may be onto something here, because I believe these semifinals were all filmed around the time that this episode airs, or actually the week before. So, yeah, I see it now. So you are right. Everything's done except for the finals.
Yeah, I'm sure I read somewhere that it was all in the can already. So like, everything's already set up.
So it's the we see Bam Bam and Tatanka beat Men on a Mission. Next week it's the Heavenly Bodies and the Bushwhackers, unfortunately. And that segues into Howard Finkel dressed as a bushwhacker hanging out with Luke and Butch eating some sort of indeterminate meat. It's like a Coliseum video from 1989.
It's not meat. It's a kind of fish. It's a really smelly fish.
That's meat?
No, but it's a specific. They did say what it was. It's not tuna. Is it
the only fish that is it sardines?
Herring? Sardines. It's sardines.
Dude, the only fish that isn't meat are Swedish fish.
That's true. But no, it's sardines, which are particularly pungent, which makes sense. The thing is a bushwhacker. I mean, we don't... here's the thing, right? We know from what... Last week, like, we saw... we've seen altercations between the Fink and Harvey Whippleman.
Mm-hmm.
They don't intrinsically say that Harvey and Fink are going to confront each other tonight, and that's why it's happening. It's just kind of... They just sort of go, oh, look, there's a Fink. He's a bushwhacker now.
Yeah, that's... It probably amuses Vince, that's why.
Yeah. I think it's just always, it's presumed, like, prior knowledge is always presumed and assumed in this company.
But when you assume, you make an ass out of Uma Thurman.
And you saw what she'll do in Kill Bill.
And then she'll cut your head off.
Yes. Yeah,
well, at least that amuses Vince, but in a moment I'm sure amuses nobody. Jeff Jarrett's still out in Las Vegas. Trying to get funding for his Uncle before his tapings, I guess. And then, in a moment that really shows the gap between how old the showrunners and producers are and their target audience, Jeff Jarrett runs into Rip Taylor.
Him from Saturday Night Live, from off of the past.
Saturday Night Live? No.
What am I thinking of?
I thought he was on Rip Taylor.
Oh, I thought he was on Saturday Night Live. I stand corrected.
I'm trying to picture that. It's actually horrifying.
I've obviously mistaken it for another program that he was in. I'm sure he was in Saturday Night Live. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
They made fun of him on Saturday Night Live.
Maybe that's what I've crossed it with. But he did loads of other stuff in like the 60s and the 70s. Like the Ed Sullivan Show. Maybe I've mixed it up with the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah. He's the one who used to throw confetti on people and dance around. And he was very exuberant.
Not many people have nice things to say about Rip Taylor.
Really?
Well, I've read a couple of reviews of this show online. And they're all very withering when it comes to this particular segment. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was a guy who had some historical significance, which is obviously in vogue with the writers, just riffing off Jarrett. I didn't think it was that offensive.
Well, it's because, I guess, Rip Taylor, he's very antiquated. He's almost like Tiny Tim in that regard.
Yeah.
Where he's just of a time, and He's more of a novelty than like an actual star. So it just seems very chintzy that you'd throw him out there and just like say, hey, let's have him give Jeff Jarrett the rub. When I was that age, I had no idea who Rip Taylor was. None. He was just some really exuberant guy dressed very loudly that like, oh, it's Rip Taylor. Oh, hi, Jeff Jarrett. And it's just, okay.
Not his first dalliance in wrestling.
It is not.
No. He appeared randomly on USWA back in the day in a segment with Jerry Lawler.
That's probably how Jerry was able to get him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So there's obviously that connection from the USWA days. So when they were filming in Las Vegas, they might have gone, hey, Rip will be in town. Let's do a bit with Rip Taylor. And I think that's how that came about.
Why didn't you just bring Andy Coffin out of hiding?
I mean, Andy Coffin probably would have wanted money for it. I doubt Rip did. I think Rip's just happy to be out of the house.
Hey, actually, Andy did it for the thrill, not for the money.
Ah, well, that too. But the money helps.
So while this is going on, I see Paul Anka's name on the marquee. And all I can think of is this famous blow-up where he yells, the guys get shirts a lot, at some stagehand. And I'm thinking, he'd have been great in AEW with all the shirts they come up with.
Oh.
Don't make an effing maniac out of me. The guys get shirts.
Yeah, this whole bit is very, as you say, antiquated. Yeah, Rip Taylor looking at a poor anchor board saying, "One day this will be all yours, Jeff." You know, it's all very. I thought it was fine.
And there'll be a six-sided ring, and the ropes will be green.
It wasn't okay. And a few people will probably call me a hypocrite because I was very down on the whole Tiny Tim thing. The difference here is this isn't weeks of announcements and publicity, and then a 10-minute segment on the television show. This is like an unannounced 45-second bit. And then we're gone again.
Well, it still sucks.
Yeah, but it doesn't suck as bad. Okay, it sucks, but in a different way.
That's the best way to put it.
There would be far more antiquated stuff that they would do over time. There's something, including something in this very episode.
I can't wait to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
The Smoking Guns versus Chris Avery and Roy Raymond. And this is where I noticed that you can barely hear any of the theme songs over the dubbing.
It's pretty bad, isn't it? It's pretty bad.
Yeah, the heat machine is dominating. At least the chyrons are fixed. So, we learned in this segment that from Vince himself that Billy Gunn is one of the top bull riders in the country.
Which would you prefer? To be a top bull rider or the greatest pure athlete?
How about an ass man?
Oh, yeah, he's an ass man.
Womp womp.
Yeah, but Smoking Guns.
But it turns out, Tommy, mm-hmm. that random anecdote will actually come into play in a storyline very soon.
Oh?
You wouldn't think, but it does.
So is this some long-term booking?
No, it's short term, but it's just sort of putting Chekhov's gun here in the form of a random anecdote.
Nice.
Chekhov's Brahmin, it turns out. So Billy takes Roy Raymond, he rips him over on a hip toss, like he just like almost stationary, just like throws him over his shoulder. It's amazing.
He looks great in this match.
Well, he's a great athlete, Billy Gunn. We know this. Still is to this day. And they keep focusing on this one kid in the front row wearing this novelty foam red hat.
Was it Trump?
No, it's some kid getting ready for whacking day. All he needs is his air horn.
Was it it's Trump? Like the one...
All he needs is I think it's the one kid that actually bought this red hat. Like, would you wear this? As a 10-year-old or 11-year-old kid, would you have bought that foam hat?
Do you know what?
For any reason.
I have owned novelty clothes like that in the past. Like big hands and stuff, like big gloves and things. I probably
I've seen
wouldn't.
Your big hand.
Yeah, you see the big hand, and I've got some little hands as well. Smaller than my actual hands. I know. I struggled to find something, but there we go. I owned several masks. And I did own a horse's head, like, mask. I don't know where that's gone. I feel like Alex might have thrown that out.
Did you put it in somebody's bed?
Possibly. Nothing gave me more joy than to put on this... I used to do it on Facebook before I deactivated Facebook. But
Tom Campbell doesn't get that part!
You pay. Somebody's getting wagged! I used to put on Facebook, a while before I got rid of Facebook altogether, I used to put the horse's head on, the horse's mask, and I'd sit and quietly read a book, and I'd turn on Facebook Live, and it would just be, horse quietly reads a book. And I'd just live stream it for about 40 minutes. Wouldn't do anything. I'd just be, it should be me, wearing the horse mask, reading a book.
Dude, Cultaholic saved your ass.
I really did, mate. Although, saying that, I feel like because Cultaholic has given my social medias a bit of a lift, I feel like if I did it now, more people would watch, and they'd probably watch it on Twitch.
Just do the news as Horseman.
Don't tempt me, mate. Do not tempt me.
I dare you.
Tom keeps making jokes at the start of the news. Just tell me the news. All right, entitled fan 92. We'll ditch the horse's head.
Whoa, hey.
Yeah, that happened.
Tommy, it's okay. Jesus Christ, man. I wasn't trying to get y'all worked up here.
Well, you did. I am 10 worked up, and I'm now off to buy a horse's head to bring that dream to life.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Cultaholic Classic Raw Review returns to 1994 in a moment. Before that, in 2020, we've got a shop open. Cultaholicshop.com. Get yourself some very limited time only Cultaholic merchandise. We're talking t-shirts, sunglasses, and limited edition, and I cannot stress that enough, What Happened to That Wrestler and Gary YouTube enamel pins. Get them before they are gone for good at cultaholicshop.com. Now let's get back, way back to 1994 on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review.
Well, let's help us settle in. We have Chris Avery, the headlock master.
Oh!
Who does apply headlocks.
I love his headlocks. They're the best.
He's the headlock master.
What a title to own.
Meanwhile, Sean's just shooting his own angles on commentary. He says he sees himself as a Bruce Dern type, which if you know anything about Bruce Dern's movies, you know Jim Ross would hate Shawn Michaels if that were the case. And go figure, Sean completes the joke by pointing out that Bruce Dern once killed John Wayne in the movie, which is why JR hates Bruce Dern.
Yeah. I didn't know that before, but that's cool.
Some double teams ensue from the guns. Sean implies that he himself rides something other than bulls. He can't finish that thought because it's a different era. So we get both sidewinders here, the one with the giant leg drop from Billy and the other with the top rope reverse slam thing. No sound on either landing because the dubbing's messed up, but the guns win as expected.
There you go. Job's a good one.
Next week, we actually have a match that could be good, or it could be a pail full of suck. Tatanka versus the British Bulldog. It's your usual dun-dun-dun-dun dramatic intro, or promo, I should say. And not only do we get that, but we have the Raw debut of Henry Godwin with slow-motion video of pigs running. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Are they trying to be a self-parody?
I think they might be, you know.
Just trying to amuse themselves.
They do. I mean, it's just that whole idea. They just try and make these matches feel somewhat important.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Henry Godwin with, like I get he's debuting on Raw next week, but you have to throw him into the dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, dramatic promo. You already had the Tonkin Bulldog for that.
We did, and there was a line in that that, unbelievably, is an older reference than Rip Taylor.
Which was?
When they say that Bulldog is hoping to, quote, throw to Tonka to a London far. And I heard it and I rewound it. I thought, is that some weird British parlance that they think exists? I was like, oh, throw him to a London far. So I Googled it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a book by Michael Innes that came out in 1949 called A London Far.
Well, that's pretty timely because we just had John Mockley talking about Fahrenheit 451 in the Dave Meltzer interview this past weekend.
Well, there you go. Even better.
From the 50s.
To reference A London Far in the 90s is certainly a hell of a look. Just in case you're interested in reading A London Far, the blurb goes as follows. As Meredith, an academic, stands in a Bloomsbury tobacconist waiting for his 2 ounces of tobacco, he murmurs a verse of London, a poem, and is astounded when a trap door opens into the London catacombs, bringing him face to face with the Horton Venus by Titian. From then, he is trapped in a maze of the illicit art trade in the company of the redoubtable Jade Halliwell.
So it's basically like the Luger Tatanga feed, but in book form.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Okay. So, sounds fascinating.
That's the book, and that's what they are referencing in this promo.
Will Horseman be reading that book?
Do you know what? I think he'll have to be. I think if he comes back, it needs to be that.
We have Bob Backlund on the King's Court.
Ah, brilliant.
What a doozy this segment was. So Lawler talks him up, calling him a role model, accuses Jack Tunney, the soon-to-be outgoing Jack Tunney, of screwing Backlund over. But Backlund, he's here to talk for himself. He says he needs no encomiums from Lawler. That's right. He doesn't need any encomiums.
That's a great word.
It is, and Backlund has some brief words for Vince at ringside. Why do we never get that match? I'm so sad.
We were certainly for a bit going in that direction.
We get this amazing moment where they show this random crowd shot, people booing Backlund, and they show Vlad wearing a different shirt than what he's actually wearing. So this is from a different taping they swiped this from, and just dropped in thinking nobody would notice.
But they didn't predict that some 25 years later there would be two arseholes doing a podcast, watching every single one in great detail.
That's right.
If only they knew China's autobiography out now.
I'm going to try to kill us now.
They would, wouldn't they? We would be done.
Backlund says he's better than Brett. He welcomes him back so that he can beat him again. Moves on to Diesel. We get this great moment where, for some reason, Backlund chooses to call Diesel Kevin Nash.
Yeah, they're pushing like this real Diesel, aren't they? And this is what does a lot of damage to him, is when they try and present him as just like a normal bloke. It's like, well, no, keep that mystique of him being Big Daddy called Diesel. Don't start calling him Kevin Nash.
Tom, I have a theory about this here.
Oh, go on then.
I think you may be looking at this all wrong.
Oh.
I think Backlund just screwed up and called him Kevin Nash by mistake.
Oh, really? You thought it was just an accident?
Because then Sean has like almost improvised, like, you know where he got that from? You know, now he knows that. You know who told him that? If it's like playing along with him, like I told him that. Like Sean trying to cover for Backlund.
Oh.
I'm going to guess that's what happened.
That might make sense.
That makes more sense than me.
Yeah, that's Sean filling a gap. That's Sean doing a good job on commentary. Filling in a gap.
Well, that's what Sean's here for. Because Sean carries guys. Sean carries guys from the table.
He's not yet, but the other week he was on and it was too much, and he was just digging on the product constantly. This week there is a nice balance, there is a comfort to him this week, but he is the best thing on this show by far.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah,
it's not even close either. So Backlund goes on about T-Rexes and how they went extinct and all that, and Lawler's legitimately looking for a moment to cut him off at, or try to let him know that, hey, we gotta end this soon. Backlund ends by yelling, the chicken wing is going to exterminate you. And Lawler is speechless. Lawler is utterly speechless.
Because he knows, once again, a King's Court has got out of hand.
It was It really is the end of Backlund's push against Diesel on TV anyway.
But it's moving to his rivalry with Bret Hart. Like, I didn't realize that, obviously, because we will get Bret and Bob down the road. I didn't realize the journey to that started here, or restarted here, rather.
Yeah, cause it will heat up, sort of, and move back into WrestleMania, unfortunately, and we get the match that we get.
How do you feel about the 8 seconds chant?
It's unique. Mm. It's definitely unique. Bob Holly versus Chris Kanyon. In what feels like an episode of Velocity from 2002.
Hey, doesn't Bob's gear look better in black?
Absolutely.
Oh, he looks like a star here. As much as a rally car driver come wrestler can be.
More so than Chris Kanyon with his purple one-strap singlet and yellow shorts.
Well, Kanyon is once again adding to my theory that when enhancement talent turns up, they have to help themselves to anything from the lost property cupboard.
Who better than Kanyon's haberdasher, everybody?
Haberdasher's a great word.
It is. You make a comeback.
John, can you just write the word haberdasher in really nice letters?
If only Kanyon had a time machine, he can go ahead to the future and find Sasha's husband and get some better gear.
Oh. John, forget that. Do Kanyon in a time machine.
Finding Mikazi. So we have a spirit of the opening sequence, and we learn here that there are no commentators seated at the ringside. I love when that happens.
It's so funny, isn't it? When somebody's like, it's either there's empty seats or they're just quietly staring down at the monitors.
As they're playing gin rummy with each other.
This, and I don't know whether you found this, like, just to reference some modern wrestling on the subject of commentary. NXT TakeOver 30 this weekend. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find the commentary a little bit off-putting?
Well, it was weird not having Morrow there.
It wasn't the fact that it was Morrow not there. I thought Corey was there and Corey did a great job. But because Beth was down the line via Zoom, I think, they were calling the monitor that Beth could see. So therefore, like, Vic Joseph had these big, impactful calls for stuff, but they were happening like a beat after the thing actually happened.
I refuse to believe that Vic Joseph made anything resembling a big impactful call.
Oh, be nice.
No, dude. I turned on Vic like a year and a half ago.
Oh, he's not that bad. He's
It's probably not his fault, but it was the last year's Rumble when he had that 4-way cruiserweight match on the pre-show. And there's that awesome spot where I think it's Kalisto and Hideo Itami and somebody else did that sort of doomsday device plancha thing. It's one of the cool things I'd ever seen. And his next sentence was, "Well, gentlemen, you have to think that." And it's like, no, yell. Go nuts for that spot.
Yeah.
Put it over. Stop being a robot.
I heard him make some big calls. Like, at least put some oomph into his voice. Because I remember it was quite jarring. Because you'd have, like, Keith Lee hit a powerbomb. And it would be like, Keith hits the powerbomb. A beat later, Keith Lee with the powerbomb. I was like, oh. That's like, the energy's there, but it's just like, you want to go into Adobe Premiere and just move the audio along a bit.
He's Max Headroom 3 seconds into the future.
Yes, he is. That's exactly what it is. Oh, no, he's 3 seconds in the past. That's the problem. He's 3 seconds in the past. So that it's a beat just after. Watch it back and see if it's just me.
It's Vic Joseph late edition.
It's Vic Joseph plus one.
It's during this match, after a nice spirited opening sequence, that Sean implies that Backlund might snap with a gun one day and references post offices and bell towers.
Oh, Christ.
That's a line you wouldn't see today.
Nah, that wouldn't make the cut. That's about as outlawed as any reference to firing Velveteen Dream.
Sean comparing back on the Charles Whitman. So Kanyon takes over. We get a great spot where he has Holly on the mat, and then he mimics driving a car.
Ah, yes! I'm glad you saw that. Get in, Kanyon.
How did Kanyon not get a job based off just that performance alone?
I like it when enhancement guys come in and just own it.
They're out there just trying to get a job, just trying to look for more consistent work. And how do they not hire Kanyon? I don't get it.
Literally, there's no one better. He asks that every time.
So Holly comes back, hard clothesline out of a corner, gets a high kick. Vince goes on about Vinny Pazienza and a boxing match with Roberto Duran. He says they're going to lock up. Should have said clinch, Vince. You don't lock up in boxing, you idiot. Holly wins with a flying elbow smash. Pretty good squash match here.
Lovely elbow, I would like to add.
Yeah, Holly has great agility.
Beautiful drop kicks, smashing elbow drop. Like the basics down pat.
Holly was a tremendous athlete, undoubtedly.
Just a bit of an arsehole.
Well, as some have claimed.
As some have claimed.
I talked to him once, he was nice to me.
He only punched me twice. And he let me keep the coins. He just took the notes.
We go to the Royal Rumble report, our first one. I'm excited for the Royal Rumble.
We haven't had... Do you know what? It feels like a hot minute since we've had a Todd Pettengill report. It does feel like a long time.
Probably a reason for that, based on his performance in this.
Well, there was at least two things in this Royal Rumble report that are very out of place in 2020, which was interesting to see.
Well, point them out as I go along in case I miss them.
All right, mate.
So we'll see what we got here. So Todd shows like Richard Jenny doing stand-up in 1988. he makes a horrible burlap underwear joke. Talks about the world's largest beach party because the show's in Tampa. A way to get to Bash at the Beach that year when you have 600,000 fans on the beach, allegedly. Mm-hmm. Pamela Anderson's going to be there. That's the big draw. She was a huge draw in 95, understandably.
And it was Todd that managed to get her through his brother's mate or some bollocks like that that he puts out into the universe.
He said something of the sort, and then he actually goes swing at one point.
That's, I've written down one thing that is very outdated. Talking, the idea of talking about an actress and ending it with swing.
Yes, thank you, Mike Myers.
Ugh, a woman!
So we learned the world title match is Diesel versus Bret Hart. Diesel has a lazy photo for his promo shot.
It is a lazy one.
I love the weird like 60s glossy photos they have for these like promo shots.
They need to take a whole bunch of new ones, I think, just to freshen up the whole image, because they're very mismatched overall.
Yeah, but I mean like the actual sheen on them, it feels like comfortably retro.
Yeah.
I mean, the Diesel shot is very lazy. It's just him. I think he's reading the menu at McDonald's. He's just looking up while holding the belt. You don't have a post shot of your world champion.
There's those random occasions, and we've had this in like on the SmackDown review in from 99-2000, where for whatever reason they haven't got a picture of the champ with the belt, so they've had to Photoshop the belt on, and it looks awful. It's like, how long? Come on, you see these lads every week. Surely you can just find a nice clean background. Get somebody with a disposable camera and take a photo.
Exactly. Just use a Polaroid if you have to.
Exactly.
Todd says this is possibly the greatest world title match ever. We get this weird, measured, subdued promo from Diesel wearing all leather while sitting on a stool. It's far too humble and wooden. Makes fun of Bret for wearing pink. Talks about how black and gold looks good on him. But black and blue will be the color they both are. Yada, yada, yada. He's coming out the champion.
I didn't think it was a terrible promo, but there was the line, the other line, which is the other thing that was very out of date, where he says, "You say you're the man, but how long have you been wearing pink?"
Well, like, yeah.
Oh. It's a line that just, in 2020, just would not fly.
Why would Kevin Nash say that line?
Bret Hart's comeback should be, "You say you're the man, but you've got long hair like a girl."
You say you're a man, but you hurt your leg every week. You say you're a man, but then you took hormone supplements in the movie The Longest Yard 15 years or 10 years from now.
Yeah, that's true. You flipping did.
Yeah, that's right. I saw the future, Diesel.
You say you're the man, but you're oversensitive to a finger poke.
You say you're the man, but you don't have red hair and you're not dating the architect.
You say you're the man, but you hang around with a lot of blokes. I don't understand that one.
I don't get it either. Like, you're reaching.
I'm tired as well.
Well, speaking of reaching, here are your first Here are your first 10 entrants for the Rumble match.
Oh, God. Now, when Todd said the 30 best WWF superstars, it's like, no. Just the 30 WWF superstars.
Not even that, because one of them's not even with the company.
On that logic, right now, I am the best person in this spare room.
That is true. You are, unless Pablo's in there, in which case you're second.
No, he's not. That's why I'm literally the best person in this room.
Gotcha.
On that logic, because I am on the Jack Jones.
Think of the star-studded rumbles we've seen over the years. We're 3 years removed from the one that Flair won that had a bunch of possible winners for that world title.
Oh, man, that was so good. 92. Fine Rumble.
These are the first 10 names they've announced.
Here we go.
Lex Luger.
Yay! Okay.
That's a reasonable name, at least. Last year's co-winner. Bob Backlund.
Yay! All right.
I mean, it makes sense. Former champion.
Yeah, defo.
King Kong Bundy. He's up there in age, but sure. Doink the Clown, who Todd says will be Dinkless, which actually made me laugh out loud.
What's that in reference to?
That Dink will not be at ringside.
Right, fair enough. I thought we might have missed a storyline on Superstars or something where the Dink's dead. I don't know.
No, I mean, Dinkless sounds like something else, and would maybe go.
John, Dinkless in Seattle.
No. Okay, that's fine. So Luger, back on Bundy, Doink, and then we learn Quang, Henry Godwin, Duke de Dumpster Jersey, the Portuguese Man of War, Aldo Montoya, Adam Bomb, and then as the palate cleanser, the moment that made me so happy that I jumped out of my chair briefing the mark out. Mother effing Dick Murdoch.
Yes!
And they just dropped his name without any explanation as to why he's in this match.
Dick flipping Murdoch. Making a WWF run.
Spoiler alert. Murdoch is low-key the MVP of that match when it happens.
Spoiler alert. Dick Murdoch wins the 1995 Royal Rumble.
I wish he just shot and threw everybody out.
What a random resurgence for Dick Murdoch here.
He was a former tag team champion 10 years earlier with Adrian Adonis. And they just threw his ass in here for some reason.
It's a weird decision to do, because like up until sort of this point, so like he's making a run back in the WWF in 94. But like, I'm sorry, 95. But this is like very late into his time. Like the last time he did anything of any real significance was in 91, and he was feuding with the Steiners, but that was late in the day. I think this is probably one of maybe two or three matches or events he's involved with this year.
It's a really random pickup, as much as I want to enjoy it, ironically. I mean, I do it. We will enjoy his appearance in the Rumble. I guarantee you that right now. But man, it's really thrown together.
That this year is the penultimate year of his career. I just want to run through the later
and life
of and life, of course.
Yes.
Just want to run through some of his key moments between now and the end of '96. So obviously the Rumble in '95 in May. So like a few months after this, he's in WCW. He wrestled the Legends match against Wahoo McDaniel.
That's right.
And it's a match that they film in black and white.
Uh-huh. With Gordon Sully on the call.
Not against that idea.
I'm okay with it.
It's all right. I would like a 90s match, but I want it shot with like a VHS filter.
That'd be something.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it? That'd be cool. That's how you do like an Attitude Night. That's how you do it. In 96, he wrestled Gangrel and the Viking in Malaysia.
The Viking?
The Viking. Just the one Viking. There's only one Viking, and he wrestled him.
Wow.
And then he was at Pro Wrestling Fujiwara facing Yoshiaki Fujiwara, and then that's it.
So this is truly is near the end for Mr. Murdoch.
Very much is. Very, very much is. So enjoy him while we got him.
We shall. Now for the Bushwhackers versus Well Done. First words I wrote were kill me.
New generation, baby.
I have to say, Howard Finkel has been ringside for hundreds of Bushwhacker matches. Possibly thousands.
Hundreds of years, then.
he's been there for everyone's entrance ever. He should know all their, you know, everything that every wrestler does because he's around them so much. This man cannot do a Bushwhacker bounce to save his life. he's doing like this weird muscle man dance while walking in the ring, which is not how you do the rhythmic arm motions that Luke and Butch do.
He doesn't get it, does he?
No. He's just totally spazzed out here. Match begins quickly. I'm okay. I'm in favor of this. Fink marches with him in the ring. It's kind of embarrassing. The look on Harvey's face matches mine. So this match is... I didn't write many notes for this match because I got kind of tuned out. I just know that Stephen Dunn fell the wrong way on a double face jam, which made me laugh out loud. Luke was facing peril. Alleged hot tag of the Butch. Fink keeps Harvey from interfering and pulls his pants off. Then Butch pins Stephen Dunn. And that was pretty much that.
I feel like you rushed through this because you didn't want to talk about it.
Yes, that's pretty much the case.
That's fine, I agree. Sean makes one fun comment, so he says, look at the quads on Harvey Whippleman.
There actually was a funny moment in there where they talk about how Harvey, I think it was Howard narked something Harvey did to the referee. And Vince goes, marked? Like M-A-R-K-E-D. Marked? He goes, narked! they're working in lingo. For some reason. That was the other fun part of the match. Because the primary one being when it ended. So we get this video of Mabel visiting with Santa, which is comical because he's this big 500-pound man sitting on Santa's lap. So then he asks Santa what he wants. And Santa goes cross-eyed for some reason, which I don't get. And then they do a wipe screen, and then we come back to Santa sitting on Mabel's lap. He goes, this is much better. So he figured the joke would be that Santa would ask for something. But no, it's just they reverse roles, and that was the joke, I guess.
All he wanted was to not have Mabel sit on him. That was all he's ever wanted.
I guess that was the joke.
I like to think that so if Santa was being a bit smarter, they would have faded out and come back, and Santa would have been suddenly surrounded by $1 million and a load of pole dancers. Thanks, Mabel!
Also, he walks up with like a whole wheelbarrow full of ECW tapes.
Thanks, Marley!
Thanks, Viscera.
Cuts back and Santa goes, thanks, Mabel. Here's a gift for you. Some new clothes. And it's a bin bag full of clothes. But Mabel just goes, I like this outfit. And Santa's like, no, the clothes are inside the bag. Oh, no.
Gives him a push in 95 to everybody's chagrin.
Yeah, that's what Mabel asked for. And he got it. So this year, the new generation era is actually Santa's fault.
Yes. Which is why he turned heel at the end of 95.
Yeah, it all makes sense. Long-term booking.
To an extent, yes.
It all makes sense.
Jim Neidhart versus Officer Bar Brady.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see Bar Brady back.
I'm working 2 weeks in a row.
I don't want to shoot any more kids. We had a day yesterday, with time of day of recording, where me and Alex and inevitably Matthew went drinking on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I think we realised that it was the first time that we'd been out since lockdown. Like the first, like where it was just like, let's go and have some lunch, and then it turned into a drink, and then another drink, then another drink. I think I had 9 pints on Saturday.
Good job.
Thank you, mate. But do you know what? I am old, and even today I feel rough. And like nearly 48 hours removed from the crime. But we spent yesterday doing nothing. We sat in pajamas. We ordered food from Uber Eats and we watched South Park. Like, we binge watched it. We watched the entire season 19, I think it is. I don't know how much of a South Park aficionado you are.
I'm more of the older days, but I've seen some of the more modern stuff as well.
It's a whole season they do where a Whole Foods moves into South Park. Mm-hmm. And it gentrifies in like South Park, and it turns out to be a massive conspiracy theory. Oh, it's so good. It's a bit darker and a bit... And sort of a bit... I mean, South Park's dark as it is, but there's an edginess to it that I've not experienced with other South Parks before. And it's just the plot of Officer Bar Brady, who gets his badge taken off him, and it turns out that he's homeless. And I was like, oh, this is really sad. This is really sad. And then when I saw Bar Brady turn up on our thing, I was like, oh, it's the homeless one from South Park.
See, he found work. He's losing that Neidhart.
See? Yeah, it's fine. And here's... I thought Neidhart was done as well, by the way.
We're getting close.
Okay.
So for those who don't know the gag here, the jobber's name is Nick Barbary, but we start calling him Officer Barbrady after the South Park character, because why not? So Neidhart tries throwing a few with the Spanish announcers for some reason. We return from an ad for the Raw video game to see Neidhart hurting Barbary. I realize Danny Davis is officiating this match. Good call with Neidhart in there.
Yeah.
A lot of clubbing down. Barbary goes flying over the ropes at one point as Sean plugged the movie Scrooged, which is really good. Which is a really, really, really good movie if you ignore Carol King's part. Neidhart brings it back in, wins with a camel clutch, and that is that. That is the last match of this taping. That's how everybody went home.
Well done. You thanks for sitting through 3 hours of wrestling. Your reward is the moment you've waited for. The Pink and Black himself, a champion within the WWE from Canada, half of the Hart Foundation. That's right, Jim Neidhart.
It's like when Barney dresses Krusty. Like Camp Krusty.
Yes.
Poor Neidhart. We get a Rumble promo with emphasis on Pamela Anderson. Understandably, because they're using her to try and draw for this mediocre show. So next week, Bulldog versus Tatanka. Taker will be in action. Diesel will be on the King's Court. And Henry Godwin will be in action. Sean goes on about hanging fishnets above the fireplace. And then we get the best ending to the show ever. Vince signs off, so long, see you next week. And then Sean just perks up a little bit, narrows his eyes, and just goes, "Raw!" for some reason.
he just emulating Vince, isn't he? "Raw!"
That should be the new... That's all, folks.
Just Shawn Michaels appearing in like the Porky Pig circle. Rawr.
Yes. Give me one reason why not.
John, give us that, please.
Yes.
Or the start of the Metro Goldwyn Mayer films.
Yes, he's the lion.
So the lion, it's just Shawn going rawr.
Oh, the lion lost his teeth.
Oh, either are good. So, what an episode we had there. What a time we had.
Yes, it's basically just, it's all just good. Everybody's go to hell home, have hot chocolate and open presents.
Yeah, that's it. Next week seems fuller, at least.
Yeah, a little bit. It's the, once you're into the post-holiday malaise of having no more gifts to open, you can... unpack Bulldog and Tatanka and determine for yourself whether or not it is a gift or a lump of coal.
Amazing. I'm excited for it. Is Strummerwitz back next week as well? He's had a prolonged absence.
He's working on a job right now, so he's a little bit busy. I'm giving him a little bit of time to focus on one thing, but he shall return soon.
You say he's busy. I was playing Fall Guys with him the other night. Can't be that busy.
Well, he's got to relax.
No! No time to relax when you're successful. I know he's. Funny enough, I know his job. He is. He won't mind me saying. He is presenting on a country music station.
Yes, he is.
What a guy! What a legend.
Yes, he's branching out a little bit, and we're happy for the guy.
It fills my heart with so much deep joy to hear of a young whippersnapper like Austin Strubowitz getting a break on radio. Oh, it fills my heart with joy.
Fills mine as well. Happy to see the kid doing good.
Best years of my life working in radio. And I've had some good ones at Cultaholic. But the best years of my life working in radio. So it's nice to see somebody else enjoying the dream. Strummerwitz will be back soon. But you've just got me and Henri until then. But until the next time that we are together, he is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we've teamed up with Audible to give you a free audiobook. You can go to cultaholic.com/audible. Sign up for 30 days. Choose a book that you like. I quite like From Under the Black Hat, starring Jim Ross. And once you sign up, you can cancel any time you like. Get to keep the book on us. You're very welcome. cultholic.com/audible. We will see you next week. Free advertising. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.